Good afternoon again, everyone. This is Marvin Silver, Outreach Director with Americans for Financial Reform. Thank you for joining today's press call on the topic Futurization and the Coming Transformation of the Swaps Market. We are recording today's call, so that means all of the audience is muted right now. When we get to that portion of our question and answer session, we ask in order for you to answer a question, if you can just hit star 6, that will allow you to unmute your line, and we ask that you would just state your name and who you're representing, and you can direct your question to one of our speakers. So at this time, what I'm going to do right now is turn it over to our policy director, Marcus Stanley. Marcus?
Thank you, Marvin. And I should say one of our speakers is having a little bit of technical difficulty, but hopefully we're going to be able to get him on by the end of the call. And regardless, we're going to have myself and Michael speak and open it up to questions. But as many of you already know, we've seen a development in the derivatives market writ large, which is the transfer of significant numbers of energy swaps and potentially interest rate swaps from the swaps market over to the futures market, and the shorthand term for this is called futurization. And part of this has been the repackaging of swaps as conventional futures. Part of it has been the offering of new kinds of futures contracts by the exchanges. And this movement has been controversial in some quarters. We've actually had Scott O'Malley at CFTC call it a quote-unquote regulatory nightmare. Obviously, the swaps execution facilities who would get this business, some of this business if it remained swaps, have been critical. But at the same time, I think it's important to step back and take a broader perspective on what's happening here, which is that the goal of the Dodd-Frank Act was to move what was an opaque, over-the-counter market that was not subject to regulation over into the world of regulated exchanges and cleared products. And that was going to be beneficial both for transparency and for systemic stability. And with the phenomenon of futurization, that's actually exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing the phenomenon that that critics of unregulated derivatives called for back in the 1990s, that these instruments are actually in many cases futures and should be traded as such. I think that the regulatory arbitrage we saw in the days of unregulated derivatives was people taking what could have been standardized instruments, could have been traded as futures, and repackaging them as swaps in order to avoid regulation. And now we're seeing some of these swaps come back onto the futures market. And from the perspective of the goals of the Dodd-Frank Act, I think that this is very much a positive development. And some of the discussion of this has said, well, does this point to a problem with Title VII, that we're building a swaps market and then nobody came? Well, part of the purpose of our building a swaps market and a regulatory structure for swaps was to stop the arbitrage opportunity of going to completely unregulated instruments. And clearly, we're already seeing very significant progress in that area from people moving to the futures market. Now, at the same time, people have raised some questions about the differences between swaps regulation and futures regulation, and whether this points to, there are some industry people who claim that this points to overly stringent swaps regulation, the fact that these would move to futures, and then there are others who would say that this indicates that there's overly lax futures regulation. So where we move to a space now where we're arbitraging between two different regulated markets as opposed to the pre-Dodd-Frank world of no regulation at all versus traditional futures regulation. And I think there are some questions about transparency on the futures market, some of the block trading levels on the futures market for some of these new proposed instruments are strikingly low and appear perhaps to have been manipulated to reduce transparency in this market. There are questions about governance of the exchanges and whether exchanges are going to try to create instruments that perhaps aren't even really appropriate for futures trading and to shoehorn them in as futures in order to avoid swaps regulation. These are all legitimate issues for the CFTC to deal with, and I'm sure they're going to come up at tomorrow's roundtable. But I think at the same time, we have to keep the perspective on the very real victory that's being won here. Now, we have scheduled two speakers today who I think are extremely well qualified to speak to both dimensions of what's going on here. We first of all have Michael Greenberger, who is a veteran for well over a decade now of the effort to regulate derivatives and swaps, including the battles in the 1990s to bring these into the futures market, and he can speak to the gains that are being made here and the reasons that that futures markets are appropriate and the safeguards that exist in futures markets. We're having some technical difficulty with our second speaker, and hopefully we're going to get him on. Wally Turbeville, now at Demos, who's a veteran of the energy futures market and has some experience or a lot of experience in the ways that can be manipulated as well. So without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to Michael Greenberger to speak on futurization.
Thank you, Marcus. As an introduction, I just wanted to say, first of all, anybody who wants to talk to me on the side about this issue, I'm more than happy to discuss it in greater detail. My interest from this futurization issue stems from the fact that in 1998 and 1999, when Brooks Lee Bourne was the chair of the CFTC and I was the director of the Division of Trading and Markets, we tried to launch a regulatory proceeding that asked the question whether swaps were not simply classic futures and therefore, as a matter of the law as it then stood, had to be traded on classic futures exchanges. As many of you know, that investigation got headed off, and then through the passage of the Commodity Futures Modernization Act of 2000, a decision was made that not only should swaps not be regulated by the CFTC as futures, but they should not be regulated by any entity at all, including any oversight for fraud or manipulation. But our direction at the time was to do exactly what futurization seems to be doing now. And my personal opinion that I'm willing to be educated out of, but I was extremely happy and not at all surprised that once the Dodd-Frank swap structure got laid out, that it was so much parallel to the standard classic trading of swaps that people would decide, why go to this new mechanism that isn't exactly classic futures? Why don't we just use the classic futures market, which people know well, which there's never been a failure, as far as I know, of a clearing organization under the classic futures model, and that's basically because there's a very intense effort to collateralize and margin on a twice-a-day basis any losses in those markets to prevent collapse, and that's been among many other things, has been very successful. First, I want to say what I think the benefits of the classic futures market are over the regulated swaps market as articulated after Dodd-Frank, and then I want to explain, because many people ask the question, well, if the classic futures market is so wonderful, why didn't Dodd-Frank just simply say that swaps should be treated as classic futures? I can't go through all the benefits because there isn't enough time, but some of the benefits are that in the classic futures market, all the intermediaries, all the brokers, the brokerage houses, the clearing facilities, are heavily regulated not only by the CFTC but by self-regulatory organizations. The intermediaries have to be licensed. They have to demonstrate competence, and there is oversight not only by the SROs and the CFTC, but by the National Futures Association in terms of overseeing shady practices that are, as well as fraud and manipulation. But there's a very high level of know thy customer and treat the customer fairly in the classic futures market. I might just say that even with the new regulatory structure for swaps, there is for swaps dealers a so-called business conduct rule, but you don't have to demonstrate competence to be a trader for a swaps dealer. You aren't licensed. You aren't overseen by any licensing authority. I think having a demonstration of competence, keen oversight of the intermediaries, and a very big commitment to treating the customer fairly is a terrifically big advantage in the classic futures market. The other thing is, as you may know, there have been very big arguments about the extraterritorial reach of Dodd-Frank insofar as the CFTC regulates the swaps market. I think that argument has been overstated and misunderstood, but in any event, I can tell you in the classic futures market, there is already very strong international relationships and a sharing of regulatory responsibility that I think will solve many of these extraterritorial problems. There are 22 foreign futures exchanges. Those are classic futures exchanges in other countries that are registered in the United States. They're called foreign boards of trade. And to the extent a U.S. citizen wants to trade on those exchanges within the United States, those foreign boards of trade have to follow a regulatory system that is very much parallel to the regulatory system for U.S. futures exchanges. There have been some breakdowns in that system, but the system basically, especially after 2008, if you are a foreign board of trade and want to have U.S. customers trade on your exchange in the United States, you essentially are applying with the acceptance of foreign governments, U.S. regulatory standards, to a lot of these extra trades. And by the way, you might ask the question, why are there so many foreign boards of trades trying to get into the United States? And the answer to that is that the United States system is the most liquid system, the most honest system, the most transparent system, and the foreign boards of trade, rather than encouraging U.S. customers to trade abroad, have every major foreign exchange wants to have a presence in the United States and has accepted an important degree of CFTC oversight to do so. To the extent that someone would trade a classic futures contract directly on a foreign exchange, let's say United Kingdom exchange or a European exchange, those exchanges have a much more well-developed regulatory system in their foreign countries that is already extant and gives the United States government the assurance in those situations that the trading done in foreign countries will be well regulated. Now, the problem we have with the swaps market is the European Union, the United Kingdom, and other markets are way behind in doing Dodd-Frank swaps kind of regulation. So there's a major argument right now about whether the CFTC should regulate U.S. subsidiaries that are doing trading in foreign countries. That would not arise under a classic futures market. Finally, the classic futures market has worked well. Customers have generally been well served. There is a very vigorous enforcement system, not only by the SROs, the National Futures Association, and by the CFT itself, but there are strong private rights of action affiliated with the classic futures market. Customers have both federal court and administrative remedies at the CFTC, and the states have parens patriae ability to ensure that the trading is fair. It is transparent. The price reporting is on a minute-by-minute basis. I know there have been arguments that margin will be collected twice a day in the swaps market. I have my doubts because of liquidity problems whether prices can be gotten twice a day. But the price in the classic futures market is a market price. It's not marked to market in the sense that you have an algorithm telling you what the price is. The market is telling you what the price is. Now, there's been some fear that the exchanges will put on non-standardized contracts. I'm not terribly worried about onto the futures exchanges. I'm not terribly worried about that because non-standardized contracts are just not going to be tradable in a classic futures sense. Alternatively, under the Dodd-Frank structure, while we've set up the so-called swaps execution facility as sort of a junior varsity designated contract market, the Dodd-Frank does contemplate that swaps can be executed on a CME or an ICE. So it's not completely foreign to the concept of Dodd-Frank that non-standard contracts would be executed on exchange. My own experience is going to be and has been that swaps are much more standardized than the swap dealers have been prepared to acknowledge, and that there will be an increasing pool of standardized swaps that can be traded at very low costs. The brokerages called future commission merchants compete mightily to get business. And also, the final point I would make is I think a lot of people who were planning to open SEFs or hoping that the CFTC would encourage opening up clearing facilities to a broader range of well-capitalized members, and they are arguing that the CME and ICE are sort of well-established shops with not a lot of ability to enter into the field. The real business in this market and the profit in this market is made by the brokers, future commission merchants. And they are the ones who represent the customer and execute the trades on the exchanges. First of all, they're very well regulated, as I said before, and the entry level to become a futures commission merchant is not very high. My view is those financial services companies that were hoping for business from an SEF or being a clearing member on the swap side will have a role to play in the classic futures side, maybe not on the exchange, but in the brokerage of it. And the final thing I would say, I've advocated very strongly to open up SEFs and swaps clearing organizations to a wide, broad-based, well-capitalized constituency, but my view is I'm prepared to trade that reluctantly for what I consider to be a market that has worked, has not caused systemic risk, has regulatory mechanisms from A to Z. Of course, a lot of that depends on who the regulators are, but that would be true of the swaps market. So my view, and I haven't been able to articulate all of my arguments, but my view is, on balance, this should be welcome. My final point is, if this is so great, why didn't they do it in Dodd-Frank? And I think you have to understand the legislative history of Dodd-Frank, because the big banks didn't want any regulation to begin with. And what they were able to get out of the first House Financial Services Committee draft was a voluntary clearing requirement of swaps. In other words, the swaps dealers made the decision of whether something should be cleared. And that was the only regulation they wanted. Through the House Financial Services Committee, that went from voluntary clearing to mandatory clearing. So the entire argument over swaps was to eliminate counterparty risk and have clearing, and there was very little focus on how the swap would be executed. In fact, Chairman Frank decided at a certain point in time that after they had agreed to mandatory clearing, he would impose an exchange trading requirement. And that, through the House Agriculture Committee, if my memory serves me well, got articulated into trading either on a classic futures exchange or the so-called new swaps execution facility. Now, there have been many arguments about what the swaps execution facility should look like and what should be considered execution, for example, whether a phone call is execution. Because the history started from the clearing side and then worked its way to execution, no one ever recommended jumping to the final ultimate resolution of just treating these products as classic futures. The banks would have never accepted that in the opening rounds of the regulatory environment because they were hoping for the minimum amount of regulation. Now, after the CFTC has articulated the swaps end of this practice, it comes very close but is not parallel to classic futures trading. And it did not surprise me at all that people would say, why are we standing on our head to create this new clearing swaps execution facility regulatory regime? Why not just go back to classic futures? I expected that to happen. And as I said, I'm willing to be educated. But I believe coming to this end of futurization is a good thing. I don't think either Congress or the CFTC are to be criticized. I don't think it reflects any inherent weakness in the swaps market. The swaps market has been set up with good protections, as Congress intended. The CFTC, and to my mind, has done a first-class job in moving the legislation to regulation. I don't agree with everything, but I think they have, by and large, done a good job. But my view is, if you're trading in a classic futures environment, there's more transparency, there's more customer protection, there's more regulatory oversight, and there are less international hardships between competing regulators. So, again, I'm anxious to hear all arguments on this, but I am very enthusiastic about this movement.
Okay, so thank you very much, Michael, and Wally Turbeville has been able to join us, and I'll let him describe his background and views. Wally?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for listening in today. I'm a senior fellow at BMOS. I was in investment banking for a long time. I've worked in this area for since before Dodd-Frank was passed. And if I'm breaking up at all, let me know. I've got a tenuous connection to this call. I'm going to end up on this cell phone. I agree with everything that Michael has said, even the parts at the beginning that I didn't even hear while I was trying to get on. But I agree with all he said. I'm going to I do want to make a couple of points that I think are important here. First of all, as these instruments are going to be treated as futures. I think one of the things that we need to focus on, and it's really an issue that exists in the market already, is that the question of block trades. Now, block trades are transactions which in futures which don't have to be matched up on an exchange that can be done over a phone. The idea is that they're large trades and that the gist of the trade is that the customer is engaging a bank to do this trade, where the bank will say, I'll take this off your hand, or I'll provide these securities or derivatives to you. And it's such a large transaction that would actually move the market. So I'll take the option and disseminate them out into the marketplace. The exchanges there are some issues about the exchanges in terms of what their standards are to determine that a trade is an appropriate block trade, meaning that it actually is large enough that it moves the market. There are lots of ways to think about how to measure that, but the exchanges have, for competitive reasons, have been pretty flexible, overly flexible, I would say, in that area. On the other hand, if the swaps then go through a swap exchange facility and the CFTC rule, proposed rule, it isn't final yet, has a similar kind of revision, but it's called a request for quotes. And what it has somewhat stricter standards around it. So for purposes of transparency, this is not something that's really different, but I think as more and more volume moves through the DCM and different kinds of volume, I think it just underscores the fact that one of the things that should be pushed for going forward is to make sure that the block trade rules do what they are supposed to do. In other words, require transparent trading for anything other than a trade so large it would by itself move the market. The other thing, a couple other things to think about going forward. One is that this will certainly broaden the kinds of products that the clearinghouses do, and want to make sure that the regulators. One of the things that will happen is the regulators will need to be very diligent about paying attention to the kinds of transactions that are cleared. If the clearinghouse is going to clear a transaction, that particular kind of derivative needs to be liquid enough so that the clearinghouse knows what its risks are at all times, what its market risks are at all times in these things that they clear. And again, this really is it doesn't go to the issue of whether futurization is a good thing, but it's something to be diligent about so that folks that are in the clearing business won't, for competitive reasons, start relaxing their standards as the business is thought of them. And we start clearing things that are not liquid enough. There's not a market that you can value them in order to try to capture market share. And finally, there is a rule that another proposed rule that hasn't gone final yet, which is the one on conflicts of interest in the exchange and clearinghouse world and CEF world. Again, as these dynamics unfold, and futurization is a significant part of that, we'll be very curious to see exactly what the final approach is to conflicts of interest in the ownership structure and operational structure of clearinghouses and exchanges. The concern always is that the banks are very powerful and that they could exert a great deal of influence on the infrastructure providers in these markets. And I think, again, as futurization sort of amps up the amount of business flowing through, I think it's important, even more important than it was, that these rules be very clear that the people who are providing for exchange services and clearing services need to be independent from influence of primarily the big banks. So those are things to think about going forward. None of it contradicts the fact that the futures markets are well known and well understood, and this means a lot of these kinds of transactions will be better managed. But it does mean that as the markets evolve and what gets traded evolves, there are things that have to be paid attention to going forward. And I think the block trade provision requiring prudent liquidity standards and protecting the companies from undue influence are the things. So thanks, and I'll pass it back.
Okay, so Marvin, you want to unmute everybody and open things up to questions?
Sure.
So are there any questions?
Hi, this is Zach at Politico. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. This could be a question for anybody on the call or Marcus or whoever wants to respond, but, I mean, do you have any thoughts on this percolating up to Congress and, you know, whether if the CEF crowd who's sort of pushing for some changes here aren't satisfied, that maybe this could come up during CFTC reauthorization or maybe some kind of Dodd-Frank amendments bill?
This is Michael. You know, I it may come up. I just think it's very hard to there's been no bar, and in fact, I think a lot of progressives have encouraged the swaps market to be treated as classic futures. So there may be complaints about it, but I don't foresee Congress saying, because first of all, it's the traditional problem of how do you distinguish between a swap and a future that has always been hard, but how do you tell somebody if they want to trade, if there is a contract offer that meets their objectives that a swap would meet, that they have to go through the swap route and not through the classic futures market route. I think it's just going to be a very hard thing to legislate. And again, as I said, I feel sympathy with the SEF crowd. And my hope is, while he said that the final corporate governance rules haven't come down yet, and I expect them to be very open to competition, and you're moving into essentially, it looks like, two big exchanges, ICE and the CME, will be the exchanges of choice on this market. But I think on balance, I'm willing to trade having this done on ICE and the CME and having a better enforcement mechanism where everybody who touches the product is held accountable. There's no, except for the business conduct rules, which I think are weaker than the oversight of intermediaries in the classic futures market. The customer has many more rights in the classic futures market than they would ever have in the swaps market. I also believe that the cost to the end user will be much less in the classic futures market. The traditional thing has been to say, well, in the swaps market there was no margin, and you have margin in the classic futures market. Well, now you have margin in the swaps market as well. But there's no doubt in my mind that even the need to margin your positions is going to be much less expensive than paying for the so-called expertise of the bespoke or non-standardized swap, which is really in effect very standardized. 95% of those contracts come from ISDA boilerplate and copyrighted language. I think the end users are going to find that they, as history develops, that they will want to trade classic futures because there's more competition on the cost side than there will be in the swap dealer swap side, and it will be much, much cheaper to hedge risk in a classic futures market concept. And I fully believe that there can be standardized interest rate swaps, energy swaps, credit derivatives that will provide enough risk protection that the need of getting into paying for a so-called, quote, bespoke, close quote, product will end. So I think in the end there's going to be the people who are probably going to be most unhappy are the people who thought all these swaps would be traded as swaps in new SEFs, of which they would be members, or possibly new clearing facilities or existing clearing facilities. But that pro-competitive stance, which I think is important, to my mind is outweighed by the more rigorous regulatory oversight. I would also say that the CFTC has, even under the Bush administration, has looked very closely at corporate governance standards for designated contract markets like CME and like ICE. And while it, that kind of corporate governance isn't mandated by Dodd-Frank, it is arguably mandated by the existing Commodity Exchange Act. And I have very little doubt that if there is a movement from swaps to futures, that the corporate governance issues, putting more independent directors onto these boards and stiffening the conflict of interest requirements, will happen. And the final thing I will say, in a post-MF global world, I see the end user and customer as having more and more power in this market. You may have seen that there were three directors elected to the Futures Industry Association in the customer-based directors. That's something very new, and I think reflects the muscle of the buy side in the classic futures market.
And I was this is Marcus from AFR. I would say, first of all, to the extent that you get the CEF guys going up there and arguing for real improvements in the regulation and oversight of futures markets along the lines of some of the things that Wally talked about, that is all to the good. And actually something that we lost when Glass-Steagall was repealed and the various dimensions of the New Deal financial regulatory structure were gotten rid of, that was that it used to be that when we had divisions between different areas of the financial sector and they were given different roles, they would actually police each other to go argue that their, you know, competitors should have to face the same regulatory standards that they did. And that would actually be positive. I think the other way this is going to show up in the congressional debate is that you have some people trying to use this futurization phenomenon to kind of create this penumbra of criticism, or that there's something somehow wrong or with what the CFTC has done, or that the CFTC has screwed up its rules because, look, we made rules for this new swaps market, but now people are fleeing it, is the argument. But that's false, because what the CFTC is doing, what's happening here in futurization, is that the underlying logic of the Dodd-Frank Act is playing itself out, that when we require things to be regulated and cleared and margined, then there's no longer a reason to dress them up as something they're not. So that's what's behind some significant portion of futurization. It's not a matter of the CFTC having made any error, quite the opposite.
Yeah, I would just say I want to second that. I think the idea that this phenomenon is a result of a weakness in the statute or the regulations is not right. I think the statute and the regulations led people to the conclusion that after you see a clearing-driven mechanism with execution at its tail end, that it would probably be just as well to go to the classic future system that has execution in the front and clearing in the back. And I think it was a natural progression, and nobody is to be blamed for this.
I would just like to say one thing. Having been around at the time of Enron and the Commodities Modernization Act and all the rest, a big reason that swaps got to be so big was that you could do the same thing as futures, only do them with swaps and avoid regulation and decent credit management standards. So, in fact, what happened was that if you think of it, a lot of the things that somebody would call regulatory arbitrage actually happened before, and now they're just being reversed. So I think this is something that that is actually a natural outgrowth of reforms, and actually is sort of changing back to what the marketplace would have looked like had swaps been properly regulated from the get-go.
Okay, do we have other questions?
I have a follow-up. This is Zach again. Do I understand correctly that your point of view is that you're okay with the CFTC going back and revisiting some of the exchange rules in light of this trend Is that accurate, and to what extent do you want them to go back and review that?
Well, the exchanges actually largely self-regulate. They actually put together their regulatory structure for things like the block trading rules and the arithmetic they use that looks at liquidity in their clearing mechanisms. So the CFTC has an approval process, but the exchanges are who set those rules. Therefore, they're susceptible if they're not behaving properly to fudge a bit for competitive purposes, make it easier on customers to try to steal them, steal market share. What I was suggesting is that the CFTC needs to tighten the screws a bit, especially on the block trading rules, which have gotten out of hand, and that would be a good thing for them to tighten down on. Also, for them to be diligent as they see what the clearinghouses are doing by establishing their own margin requirements.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they went through, and as part of the swaps regulation process, examined a lot of these issues like block trading levels that also appear in futures markets. And you know, we actually think that they were a little low on the block trade levels, even for swaps. But they did, take comment from people and think about the economics of the issue and set some standards from the regulatory level. And they should be willing to do that in the future as exchanges as well, where it's appropriate. And they also have this rule hanging out on exchange governance that I think is also going to affect the futures exchanges.
The other thing to remember is the big end users, if swaps do become futures, you suddenly have the DE Shaws, the CalSTRS, the CalPERS, who are going to be end users in the classic futures market and weren't there before. And I think they were very instrumental in ensuring protections for themselves in the swaps market, and I think they'll be very active in making sure there's the same level of protection in the classic futures market. But I must say, as a former regulator, even worrying about the block trades, I feel much more comfortable having these things on the classic futures market now and working to improve that market. I think even going in, the protections, to my mind, are greater to the customer in the classic futures market than they will be in the swaps market. That's not to criticize the legislation. I think we supported Dodd-Frank. We still support Dodd-Frank. But what has happened is the structure of Dodd-Frank and the structure of the rules have just turned the big part of this industry around and said, this looks so much like a classic futures market. Let's go back to what we know that's been tried and tested. And in terms of tested, I know the Fed made some argument that at one time the CME needed some kind of bailout. That was supposed to have happened when Brooksley Bourne and I were regulating the CME. The CME that is now composed of the Chicago Board of Trade and NYMEX has never had a systemic failure. And the reason for that is to protect themselves against failure, they are absolutely vigorous in making sure that a customer is not overexposed to a losing position. And I think that discipline, it might be in the swaps market, but when you have the people who have to enforce that are directly regulated by the CFTC, the SRO, and the NFA. And by the way, there would be no SROs in the swaps clearing market. To have that discipline, I just think, to my view, it's safer to the economy and it's safer to the investor. It's not perfect. We lose some things from the swaps market, but I'm speaking for myself. I applaud the movement to futurization.
Okay. Do we have more questions? Any of our Hill staff or folks want to venture out with a question?
Okay.
Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll wrap it up. Thanks, folks. Thanks for your patience with a few technical difficulties, and thanks for participating.
For those who are interested in the recording, you can please contact us here at AFR for further information on how to access that.
All right. Thanks, of course, to our speakers as well. Bye, everybody.